This conference will now be recorded.
Okay, 1 o'clock. Let's call the meeting to order. So, first item of business is consider the minutes for May 7th, 2025. They're considering. Can I accept that as a motion? All right, I got a motion by Jay. Second by Dustin. Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Planning, review planning grant applications.
So, Dustin, you want to talk about your success?
Yes. Bob helped us get it pushed through at the top, so we're good to go.
So you're going to withdraw your application for the NPO funding?
Yep.
Because you got everything you needed from the COG. That's good news for all of us. The other two requests were one from Hurricane and one from. Is Chuck here? There you go.
So, is there enough money to cover both of those?
So,
Hurricanes and Ivans?
The Ivans ask, I believe, was 20,000.
I think it was the.
Was it? What was it even?
Ivans is 100.
Ivans is 100,000.
Oh, 20,000. They were requesting 100,000, and Arthur, yours was a request for.
I think so, yeah.
We have enough to fund both of them at those levels. 100,000 to Ivans.
Ivans and 30,000 to Hurricane. Any discussion?
Ivans totals 100, or Hurricanes totals 130,000. Is that more in, or?
Yeah, I mean, we'll take more if we can get it, but that was what our original request was.
You want to do no more than 50%, I wouldn't imagine, because you want to control it.
Well, we were anticipating that we would be doing all the contracting and project managing.
How much do we have total available?
So.
Did you say 240?
No.
150,000.
We have 150,000 in the pot. If we don't program the additional 20,000, there are some other studies that we could put that to within the NPO. So I would feel comfortable about approving the requests.
As presented, 100,000 to Ivans and 30,000 to Hurricane. Any more discussion? We need to.
We do need a formal vote to advise that to. We need a formal motion to advise that those funding levels to be. Yeah.
Do we have a motion to send this on to DTEC?
I'll make that motion.
I have a motion by Todd, second.
Second.
Second by Jay. All in favor? Do we need a roll call vote on anything like that? All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Item B, review connectivity mapping tool. Who's that?
Nick.
Yeah.
This is Nick. Sir Nick.
So this item will kind of go into item 2C as well regarding the Senate Bill 195. So if everyone remembers the last time we talked about this, we were talking about creating an analysis tool that identified connectivity ratios within a given region. So we showed this map that WFRC created. It goes over their area and the MAG area of it that identifies some intersection score capabilities. So what you're seeing on this map is a total intersection score in the whole Wasatch Front Mag regions. It gets into the idea of intersection density, which is calculating the number of three-way and four-way intersections in a given area. Creating a map that identifies connectivity breaks. As everyone remembers, this is the idea of looking at street endpoints, whether they have been haven't started new construction yet to end a roadway or identifying cul-de-sacs. So that we can see where the network breaks and where the network stops, so that we can identify if it's feasible to connect certain areas. It's much like how it's being done in the grant that was awarded to UDOT for connected communities. So things like that are kind of what we were trying to identify with the analysis. So we put something together so we kind of can identify the same things in our area. So we created a map that has the same, based on the exact same methodology that WRC and MAG did, with the one or two key differences. So we have an entire intersection score grid in here, as well as a TAS intersection score area, same way that they did on their map here, analyzing the TAS zones. We can dive into it a little deeper by identifying intersection scores. This is just a clustering. It's just a little easy graphic so that people can identify it a little easier.
What do the numbers mean?
That's the clustering. It's just identifying just like how many are in that area. If you're zoomed out to a certain extent, it can be adjusted. If you zoom all the way down to
intersections?
The number of whatever type of intersection you're looking at. So if you look at the... If you look at the legend, blue is for four-way intersections, three is for two, for orange is for three, and then red is identified as in what we, I'm just calling it for rank of two, which is just pedestrian crossings at mid-block locations. So that's what we were trying to get at with some of these analyses. So you can look at it, you can drill down in, and then you can obviously see where the endpoints are. I don't have a layer on. Whoops. There we go.
So that room.
There we go. Okay. So there's an endpoint here because it's in what looks like a cul-de-sac coming up to a three-way intersection. So that's kind of what we're trying to get at with that. So the methodology, like I said, is already written in the WFRC's story map and how that's done. So we didn't find it necessary to rewrite all of that and just reinvent the wheel. So we're just going with the basic information. What we have provided in this map that will be sent out later on after this meeting is a way for you to go in and provide any comments. So what we can do with this is we can go in and use the edit tool here. You can create a new feature, come in here. If there's anything that you think might be need to be reanalyzed or re-looked at, if any of the data is not perfect, we can go in there. You can just add something there, create a brief explanation, that kind of thing. You can put in all this information, receiver name, all that, if you'd like. But yeah, so we can, those capabilities are in this map as well.
Yeah. Can I make a comment there?
Yes.
Can I just pull up the chair for a minute?
Yeah.
And I don't think that we need to make a comment on every endpoint or every endpoint that we may have missed. I think it's more important to be looking at the places that SB 195 really is trying to get us to hone in onto. Like, will you scroll into to that location in Washington Fields? What's that road called where it's supposed to connect?
Oh, Commerce Drive and 3000 East of Washington Fields.
Yeah. Is that up by Costco?
No, Little Valley. No, Little Valley.
So Commerce Drive.
Down by the hill there.
You go through the neighborhood and then you go to future master plan.
Yeah, right here. So like we're showing as an endpoint on this side, but not an endpoint on this side. So we may want to say, hey, this is going to, we'd like, this is a,
this is an important connection for St. George City at some point, and for the region as a great. And so those are the type of things we're hoping to see the comments on that will hopefully help inform the legislature as we go out and talk to them about our process here.
Another good thing to point out is we used the latest and greatest data available to implement into this analysis tool, but that still can be behind the times a little bit. So if there are roadways in your areas that are actively being extended or being developed right now, a comment for that, just knowing that those are happening would also be beneficial, so we can keep that note in there. Any questions on the map itself?
The dark blue, light blue, is that good, bad, or is that just number of intersections?
That's just, yeah, when you zoom in and out of this, all of this is really doing is clustering the amount. It's really just a visual effect. There shouldn't be any differences in like colors. Like I said, blue is four-way, orange is three-way, and then, like I said, there's a two-way option, but we don't really see those on the clustering. So it's just showing you, just giving you an aggregate number of how many of those type of intersections are in that area. So when you see that big 750 circle here, that's just maybe that many in that little area. Yeah, as you zoom in, it'll kind of.
So did you say there's mid-block crossings? There's some on
the yeah, area. So let me show you an example of that.
Like over by the hospital, I think.
There, yeah, I think there's one over there. Some of them can kind of, here we go. Here's one on Tabernacle. If anyone remembers that, let's change the face map on here. This ped crossing right here outside of that candy store.
Yeah.
We identified those.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, stuff like that.
Judge Market.
Yeah. Yeah, Judge Market. Yeah. So there's another one right across the street here outside Electric Theater. We try to identify as many of those as possible. This is something that was not done in the WFRC analysis map, just simply because they have way more data to sift through, so they don't have time to kind of drill down deep and hit as many of those. There's a regional size difference in that matter, so we thought we could take advantage and identify those as much as we could.
Okay. Any questions? In the end, this will hopefully help you when you're updating your traffic circulation element of the general plan. This can be a tool, we hope, to help inform your decision making.
That's just in the MPO, not in the entire county?
Yeah, it's just the MPO. The Senate Bill 195 is specifically calling out MPOs in urbanized areas to do stuff like this, so that's what we're doing.
Okay, I'll just go. You're the chair. Can I just go right into the?
Yes, go ahead. Is that SB 195?
Yeah. So the purpose of this tool is to help inform all of our cities in the MPO area and the county regarding your instructions on the traffic circulation element of your general plan, which we are required to do. As a reminder, that's due in July of 2020. November of 2027. So you have a few years to do it. I know some of you are well on the way. I think Santa Clara is in the middle of a general plan update.
Correct.
And hopefully we can get this to your consultant as soon as possible.
Yeah, we've spoken about that. Okay. We're just starting hours.
Perfect. So it sounds like we're right in the right timeline anyway. But one of the MPO's responsibility in this is to work with you all and come up with a presentation to give to the legislature during one of the legislature interim committee meetings no later than November 1st. We are actively working with WFRC and MAG to try to get a time. We're hoping in September or October. So what I would like to do, hopefully sometime this summer, late summer, early fall, is between now and then anyway, meet with each one of you and just talk about where you're at and what we hope the process will be, so we have something to present to the legislature when we go up there and give our presentation. I think that might make more sense to do it individually rather than sit here at this meeting and go through every single person, every single city.
So you're doing that November 1st of this year?
Yes, and it's just going to be an update where we're at and what our goals are going to be to get it done with it, to get your general plan updated in that timeline. So.
Is the transportation plan?
Yes, the transportation element of the general plan. So that can be what I know some of you probably say, refer to, or your general plans might say, please reference our transportation master plan. And so it might be looking at that. However you do it is what how we'll report it.
But that's essentially what you want, though, is this stuff that it, from the transportation master plan, right?
Yes.
So you're not going to put in regionally significant roads like Northern Corridor, Western Corridor, you're not going to put those in? You want us to identify them and put them in?
Yeah, so that's part of the process on this update, is that you'll identify areas that don't currently connect to places of regional significance, like schools, hospitals, recreation areas, employment centers, things like that, where there might be a disconnect. That's what they're really looking to say. Hey, cities, are you thinking about how your network does or doesn't connect to these areas? And hopefully between this tool and the grid study, you know, those are a couple tools that we that the MPO is working on that will hopefully help inform. And I would imagine you probably have some of those identified in your transportation master plans as well.
That's
it?
Any questions? We good? Thanks, Nick. Item D, Southern Parkway Development Standards. Brad Anderson.
I'm here.
There he is.
Bring that chair back. I think I'm going to need it. I hope I'm not here that long. You mind passing me that? So I'm going to go over this. This is the signed agreement for the cities and the county where the Southern Parkway is there.
Can I run that?
Yeah. So I'm just going to go over some of the main points. I gave you the whole agreement. The agreement actually talks about references a lot more than just the agreement. But you guys are all aware where the Southern Parkway is because everybody's from down here. But it more or less starts at exit 2, goes up kind of the backside, and hits exit or SR9 in Hurricane at 2800 West. Or roughly milepost 6.55 on SR9. So in preserving this corridor, those listed here, the parties included UDOT, Dixie MPO, Hurricane City, Washington City, St. George, and Washington County, all signed this agreement back in 2009, early January, late February. And I just wanted to remind everybody that this agreement still in place as we add any interchanges or anything to the Southern Parkway. The actual corridor preservation agreement said that you would put in your master plans and stuff, that the alignment of where it was going based upon the 2005 FHWA record of decision from the environmental portion of that. This was a 300-foot wide corridor with limited access, grade separated interchanges, and that you would agree in signing this to the development standards for the Southern Parkway when it was signed. So this manual sort of covers two different things. It covers like the design standards of the roadway, the ramps and everything. And then it also addresses how the accesses to these roadways will happen. So it's kind of a twofold. And I'm going to hurry and go over the construction very quickly, only because most of it's constructed. So anything now, you would have to make sure you follow these as well for any interchanges. But you have to adhere to UDOT's Road Design Manual of Instruction. Anything you connect has to be a level of D service or better. These are just some of the design standards within that agreements that I just passed out. The agreement itself, there's 6 pages of these. But as you guys know, with standards, that's not near enough for everything we have. So anything that's not in that agreement, you would have to go back to the UDOT and AASHTO standards that govern all of this as you add an interchange or anything like that. It also prohibits utilities from being placed parallel to the Southern Parkway that are not for the purpose of the parkway. Any questions on what that entails or what utilities will be?
You know the reasoning behind that, or was that regional water line or something?
I think that to clarify, I think it needs to say within the right of way.
That's taken word for word out of what's
in there. Yeah, I know, but
well, so the intent was that the UDOT right of way would not have those parallel facilities in there, but it would be acceptable for
like ATMS and stuff like that.
It would be acceptable for ATMS or a gas line or something to be able to come in and build a parallel facility outside the UDOT right of way.
Correct.
So yes, yeah, correct.
It is unique to the UDOT right of way. Well, answer our first
question. Yes, I'm going to hurry and read that. Let me hurry and find it.
It's behind that, so you could expand this in future.
Yes, and not have problems, conflicts with utilities is why it was. So what it says,
it's also just for management. If it's an expressway type of classification, we don't want permits in there and utility companies in there working within the right of way inside that fence, because that functional classification of expressway, you're not expecting people working close to the road. It's supposed to be just like it's similar to an interstate. You don't want a bunch of people working inside those fences because they're driver expectations of the roadway, there's nobody there besides cars.
And there are certain places that have easements that are off the alignment that those other things can go in. But what it says, examples of accepted utilities would include ATMS, storm drain pipe, electrical conduit for roadway lighting, and other similar utilities.
Where are you at on that?
Page 13. It's 7.1 Southern Parkway Main Line. It's under utility section. Okay. Any other questions? Feel free to ask any questions. I can stop. We can go through it. I've got my marked up version. You guys don't. Yours isn't marked up because I didn't want you to see. But this is kind of what this laid out. This is the typical section. This is the ultimate build out, which you can see. The first phase had the ultimate build out. It has 12-foot lanes, 10-foot outside shoulder, 6-foot inside shoulder with a 30-foot clear zone on both sides, and then the median at 72. This is where only one road exists. That's the typical section, which aligns with just one side of this. And then this is the typical section for the ramps. So that's what has to be built when we do any ramps that are added to this. And just so everybody's aware, UDOT has built every regionally significant interchange on SR7. So any more interchanges that are added are local or developer funded. Okay. So I went over that really quick with the standards for design. If anybody's designed, there's a ton more than that. There's a lot more we can go into. I'll let you read if you have any questions there. If not, we can do. But this, now I'm going to go into the access and kind of what's in here with access. So it references this. We have to do the accommodation of utilities and control
and protection of state highways right-of-way manual. That's the man, it's a lot, but that's the manual that we have to follow for the access. And it is a category 3 system within that manual. So in page, I can hurry and find this for you because I didn't look at the page. On page 3, it has this access spacing, but I'm just going to go through a few of them. It talks about the Southern Parkway on the west side of I-15, which is already built out, right? So I just went from the southern, the east side of I-15. These are some of the major distances that we need. And just remember, these are minimums. So the minimum is this. You can always go wide or longer or more excess. So we will have grade separated interchanges. And then these interchanges, the minimum that we can have for just a regular interchange is you have to have 4,800 feet between interchanges. With auxiliary lanes, we'll have 4,500. This is what it looks like and the spacing that you would have to have just with an interchange, from interchange to interchange. As you can see, the spacing is from the center of the cross street to the center of the cross street. And that, as it references in here, all distances are taken from a cross street to a cross street. So there it is. There it is for the auxiliary lanes. If you have that, you can make them a little closer to 4,500 feet. Reason for that is, as you guys are all aware, if they're closer than that, they don't function as well. You get too much buildup of traffic and they just don't work. So that's why this was sort of developed. This is why we want this to be followed as we're looking at interchanges. And I know every city along this corridor is growing. We're already adding a few. We just wanted to remind you about what they are. So for frontage roads, signal spacing has to be 1,320 feet between signals. Then streets can be closer than that at 500 feet. And you can have access spacing at 250 feet that's not a city street. But the main one to remember here is the distance from the first access to the ramp is 500 feet. And like I said before, that's from the center of the road to the center of the road. So on any access that you plan on building, we will require that 500 feet access.
Is that 250 feet, is that for a driveway, like for into a Costco or something?
Yes, so that...
That's the 250 feet if it was just into a private...
Yeah.
So in previous discussions of interchanges along I-15, we talked about a minimum of 1,000 feet. You're saying 500 here.
Remember, this was signed in 2009. This is what the standard was then.
Okay.
We are trying to change that on I-15 because I don't know why. Green Springs, anybody's driven there, sorry. You've got too much traffic trying to go too many different directions too close to each other, and what does it cause? So we would prefer 1,000 feet. Remember, these are minimums. This is what's in the agreement that all the parties signed to.
2009.
Yes. So this is what we're going to stick to on the Southern Parkway, because that's what we agreed to. That's what you guys agreed to. So we want to make sure that that 500 feet is followed, and that's a minimum. I mean, intersections will work better with more spacing, but then developers want to put in as close to the interchange as they can. We understand that. So
yeah, to Myron's point, this is a minimum. So it would be better to have more than 500 feet, but that is what the agreement says. That's what we're going to hold you to. But if you're looking at planning interchanges, it would be good to look at more than 500 feet to make sure that you don't have issues with other intersections in the future.
You likely won't have the issues day one opening up. As congestion builds, that's when you start having undesired access.
We didn't have congestion on Green Springs until about 2005.
I know, and now you can't get rid of it, right?
So just remember, in your planning, this is what you need to, the agreement and the what you agreed to as a city along the Southern Parkway, or the county did as well. All right. So the things that I wanted to remind you of, this is just kind of a reminder slide at the end. They're all minimum distances. They're measured from the center to the center. Due to limited access, interchange spacing along the Southern Parkway, a network of frontage road and local roads should be planned to provide access to all the properties. It's kind of what you guys have to do as a city or a county. We may modify that based on physical limitations. Those would be very minor. They would come with lots of discussion. I just wanted to bring it up there. It is in the agreement that we may approve something, but we're going to stick to our standards as much as we can, unless you can show a huge problem with intersection spacing and you need another one somewhere else type thing. So.
Hey, Brett, can I back up real quick? The comment earlier about the 250 feet for local road, that is not a minimum spacing from the ramp. That's spacing between
the intersection and the frontage road.
No, the frontage road to frontage road.
So on that, the frontage road, having those access.
There is no access.
Come up to that intersection off your front, you're on the frontage road, you can't have anything within 250 feet of that intersection.
On the frontage road, yes. But 500 feet minimum is, that's the minimum. There's nothing closer to the ramp than 500 feet.
No driveways, no nothing.
No driveways, no private accesses.
Okay, all right.
So,
makes sense.
Sorry.
Just what, that's where they always want to put a Maverick or something.
As I pulled it up, as you said that, no, it's not closer, so I'd reread it, but it's.
No.
Okay.
It's the.
The first one is 500 feet. After that, they can be spaced closer.
250.
Yes. The first one is 500 feet.
It's clear there, yeah.
This doesn't apply to SR9 as we're coming back. It wasn't part of this.
No, this agreement is specifically for the Southern Parkway, so SR7. So any other roadway would be UDOT standard at the time. This was agreed to on the Southern Parkway, so you guys could put it in your plan, and it wasn't built. Phase 1, I think, was started, but it wasn't built, so we wanted you guys to preserve the right-of-way through there, so the Southern Parkway could eventually be built in what the environmental document cleared. So, as you're aware, local jurisdiction is responsible for building adjacent to frontage roads and providing access management to streets and properties to frontage road. And then I just, if I didn't bring it up before, UDOT has constructed every regionally significant interchange along the Southern Parkway. Any more that are added will be locally funded or a developer funded.
The question on the one that accesses the backside of Quail Lake, it's only got one ramp now. That's something that
would have
to be locally funded.
You think it's San Hollow?
Or San Hollow, yeah, San Hollow.
Yeah, that's not a regional interchange.
Absolutely. So yes, they funded that one themselves. Just so you're aware, okay. UDOT's taking the stance, we will not allow things like that anymore. You've got to build all four ramps. The reason that one was built is for more the conservancy, water conservancy district to be able to access their gate and their water rights, their water stuff that they had there. So they could get on and off. From what I understand, that's been funded now, so it'll be built.
The other half?
Yeah.
I'm not aware.
I got the legislature.
Yeah, I can speak to that. It's something that Hurricane City and Utah State Parks are partnering to get those other two ramps built.
It wasn't, I don't believe it was funded this last legislative session, correct?
It's not part of the UDOT funded.
Yeah.
It's not a UDOT funded project.
Utah Outdoor Recreation Initiative?
Yeah.
So when you come to us for, to look at an interchange, we will follow what I've given you here. And then if it's not in there, we'll follow just UDOT standards or FHWA standards to do that. We will require that 500 feet, and that will be within the right-of-way documents that you have to provide going forward. Any other questions?
Yeah, Brent, on our regional transportation plan, we have designated a second interchange servicing the Desert Color area, exit 5 off of the Southern Parkway. And I think there's a couple of other interchanges on that road as regionally significant. They're not yet built.
What I've been told, and maybe Cameron can help me here, I've been told that we have funded everyone that we can. I mean, you as an MPO can decide, but...
Well, we put some MPO money into the exit 12 out on George Washington Boulevard.
Okay.
That was funded partially by the MPO and partially by Washington City, right?
It has fed funds in it as well. It has state funds as well.
So I guess that's clarification. UDOT's regionally significant means that UDOT's going to provide funding to help build it or build it itself. And we are done with all the UDOT regionally significant. There still may be a regionally significant interchange to the MPO area, but UDOT will not provide any funding to build it.
Okay.
So and none of these, no interchanges right on the Southern Park will be open for any funding or participate in any way.
Okay.
And on that George Washington Boulevard, we went to the state. We didn't go through UDOT to get money. We went through the state legislature, got money that way, and then they issued it to UDOT.
Okay.
UDOT itself didn't pay for any of that interchange.
Okay. The other question I have, this is a 2009 document. It predates most of us.
Exactly, and that's kind of why I brought it up.
Is there an effort to renew those signatures or not?
From our, I'm going out on a limb here, so anybody can, we signed it as UDOT, we'll agree to it. Your mayors or whoever's in there, whoever signed it, you can see, you signed for the city. You bound the city back then, so you're still in, it's still an active document, even if you yourself did not sign it. So there's, we're not looking to update it, we're looking to follow it from what's been put in. That's why when I said we want to follow it, we put 500 feet, even though now on I-15 we're looking for 1,000 feet. We'll follow what we put down on paper, and we want the cities and the county to do the same.
If there are concerns or issues as we go through there, we can address those. But there's nothing, I would dare say, in every scenario, the standard has increased since that time. And it'd be more costly. But you know, there's no effort right now for us to go through and update, change, or modify those standards.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
We good? You guys have all the right way. You need the 300-foot corridors all required as far as you know?
For mainline SR7, yes, we have everything. As far as
these interchanges that are going, I mean, they go outside of that 300 right feet, we'll need something from either the developer or the city.
And maybe just as those come in, it will be required per the agreement that you'll sign to put those interchanges in. That right of way will need to be transferred to UDOT prior to construction beginning. We will not begin construction until that agreement's signed, until the property is not just in a local's name, but in UDOT's name.
This has been off track, but I think Chris, I don't know if you want to bring up discussions we've been having about Southern Parkway.
Yeah, so several people have reached out to UDOT saying, when are you going to build the second barrel in Southern Parkway? So we started looking at what's in the plans, and there's one section that's currently in the NPO plan to go to a second barrel in phase one, and that's from Desert Canyon to the airport. And so I started looking at that going, that doesn't make sense because that's not a higher traffic volume area. But I didn't want to change the plan until we did some scenarios with the travel demand model to say where is the next highest priority based on current traffic and future traffic, what we're expecting. And so Rutica worked with Porox to run those. And essentially, right now in the long-range plan or in the NPO's plan, it's broken into the same phases that you got built them. But now if the additional interchanges have been built, like George Washington, those segments don't make sense anymore. So we need to split some of those segments up into different projects because from Airport Parkway to George Washington does not have a lot of traffic. But from George Washington to Sand Hollow does. And those aren't the same lines of the segments that we built them in. So we have the model to show what needs at first. So essentially, we need to pull one of the projects out of phase one and put some of these other ones in phase one as much as we can within our fiscal constraints and to try and match where we're seeing the growth. So George Washington Sand Hollow has much higher current volume and predicted volume than the portions in St. George right now. So we need to move those up into a higher phase rather than there. And I don't know, if Nick or Roderick, if you want to explain that any more or show the numbers or anything that we have.
I had the numbers up here.
There, yes.
So what's the mechanism for doing it? Just to do that?
So no, it's really a discussion here to say, does everybody agree with these proposed changes based on what we're seeing with the model? This group makes a recommendation to the executive group.
We want to pull that discussion in at a future meeting.
Yeah.
So that it can be an agenda item.
Okay. So I just want to give you a heads up that we'll put something together to show you exactly what phases are and kind of show how we're going to still be fiscally constrained with these projects and make the recommendation of this is what we'd like to change in the plan.
And once DTEC approves that, then Chris and the planning group updates the long-range plan, the work fits in the phase one, phase two, phase three, unfunded, funded, and comes through the show. Yeah. You know, updates that and once every 4 years.
And we can make an addendum to give it a
sooner. There's going to be any opposition.
And really, it'll be
at the time they probably thought the segment that they put in.
I think that's what it was. It was probably from before we completed Southern Parkway. It was probably in there, and now it's completed, and we're getting some of that traffic from SR9.
Yeah. I'm doing that little plot, especially at nighttime. It definitely needs to be divided.
And we'll continue to monitor it, and in the future, if travel changes, demand changes, we'll update it accordingly.
The current numbers on these sections of road, you can see here, this is George Washington, the new interchange at George Washington Boulevard, going northbound 6400, southbound 68, around 62 and 64 from that interchange at Long Valley and Washington Dam, going east and west. So it's getting up there, and the numbers, like Chris said, on our summer phase one projects in other parts of Southern Parkway may not be performing.
When you scroll back up, you can see on the other side of George Washington Boulevard, next one.
Oh yeah.
800. Yeah. So you can see the stark contrast.
Wow. Yeah.
Things changed.
What the interchange
is. Yeah.
Once that interchange opened, I sat there and watched traffic opening day, and it was interesting to see how many were coming from. I'm assuming Hurricane and making that right turn onto George Washington Boulevard.
Yeah, GPS is also giving a lot more people the direction to go that way as well. I've done it a number of times.
It was just surprising day one that there was already that many people using it.
Yeah, those will be data-driven decisions as we gather more and more data.
Yeah, so every time we build a new interchange, it will change the traffic pattern on the Southern Parkway. And the beauty of having the travel demand modeling capability within our NPO is we can do these analyses as time
goes forward, and we'll be able to adjust our plans. Cameron, you mentioned we adjust our plan every 4 years.
So.
But we can do a.
We can't modify it internally.
And just to give you a picture of an expressway type roadway like this, we wouldn't say that we need to expand to more lanes until we have like 13,000 cars per day.
From two, so, greater so than two. Direction.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, greater than the one lane each direction. So I'm just saying that the public is saying, well, it's already busy, we should expand now. From UDOT's perspective and the nationwide modeling thing, it can have double the traffic before it needs to expand.
There.
So that's the message that if people are asking the cities that, yes, we know it's busier, but it can still handle a lot more before we have to spend the money to do it, because it can handle more.
And they'll likely be small projects like the little up the cut right now we're designing, we'll construct next year, that passing line. There'll be little segments like that along the way that we can try to be reactive to as we see needs. That wasn't a TIF-funded project. That was just one that came out of our Transportation Solutions Program that we funded at the region level. So we'll try to monitor and do those things along the way as well.
Is the UDOT traffic math, is it pretty updated, like fairly close to those numbers?
No.
No, okay.
It's not. That's why I wanted to work with NPO to run these scenarios, because they have the better data and they can actually look at this. Where we take our traffic count like once every 2 years, and I don't know the time frame or how they're normalized. So, and they're usually 1 day counts. And then we just say, based off that 1 day, this is the yearly amount. So it's not, our statewide traffic counts are not nearly as accurate as what we get with this. And so that's why we did this, because it should be a lot better information.
And just as a quick reminder, our next plan update with the new and improved numbers is about next year. So we should have a better idea of that too.
Just for clarification, the developer funded interchanges then become UDOT's property and UDOT is maintaining them, right?
Yes.
We don't have to maintain them.
We will oversee those as with the UDOT project manager for that reason, is that they'll be owned and operated by UDOT after
the through roads underneath or over the top. The municipalities or counties will still be responsible for those, right?
Correct. Any other questions? Thank you, Brett. All right, local project status updates. FHWA. Someone online?
Okay.
All right, Hurricane.
Our 100 North project is continuing on. It'll probably be done by Thanksgiving. Maybe we'll get a bonus and it'll be done by Halloween. Our 1100 West project that I reported on last week is wrapped up and done. And that's all I have to report.
Did Ivan's come in?
Yeah. So our Highway 91 project, it's about 50% complete. Anticipated completion date about the end of July, maybe even sooner. And it's going really well. We just finished up our pavement maintenance and we got some striping and we're going to do on that next week.
All right, looks good. I've been a while.
Yeah, it's coming along.
Traffic control's been good.
Yeah, we've kind of been staying on top of that.
For Lawerkin, we just finished our pavement preservation project, and that's about it for us. Leeds, are you in here? No. St. George?
Really good over last. We finished our chip seal project. We have 7 traffic signals under construction. We're still hopefully closing in on the permitting for the George Washington. Bridge and roadway.
I was not about 700 East. Yeah, we just started construction on our 700 East project.
Yeah, voidless.
Does that need more detail? Yeah, so that's the 700 East Trail and equestrian buildouts. It's funded partially by the city. It runs along University Avenue. We started construction this week. And we'll be
putting in the median that separates the trail probably in about a month. We're starting on the asphalt preservation. Some grinding to get off the old striping so we can put in the new striping for the road type.
Be done before school starts? Is that the plan?
That's the plan, done before, substantially complete before school starts, but there might be some landscaping and other items that continue into the school year, but the main roadway should be done by school starts.
On that George Washington Boulevard, we did receive concurrence from FHWA to the obligate all federal funds, so that's happened. We finally got that done. So the city should be receiving an invoice for that dollar amount that's been expended to date, and then once we get that to you, the obligation will actually take place, but we do have FHWA's concurrence on that. So it's, it will happen.
The beginning of it.
Is that it for you guys?
Yep.
Alright, sound clear.
We did a chip seal mining parkway last Saturday and Sunday, and I took St. George's advice and my public notice to, I said pay my maintenance instead of the chip seal. Didn't get any phone calls. That went really smooth, and then Myron organized a tour of the Western Corridor with the local legislative staff, the MPO group, and myself and Ivans were there. Hopefully we can get some chatter going on the Western Corridor for the state. That's all we have.
I just wanted to know, I drove 25 miles an hour.
You're the only one.
From one end to the other, it was just after the chip, and I only had six cars behind me.
We get a two block.
Honking their horn.
Calling every day, giving the number one salute.
Enjoyed every second.
Tokerville, we're just working diligently to finish that Tokerville Parkway. We should be start seeing some tie-ins from the north end and the south end to the SR-17 within probably the next 2 months. And a lot of traffic control in the process. So it's going to be kind of a, we're working on that with UDOT and the contractor.
That's about it.
Transit, at Cameron?
Yeah.
How's the hiring for the new manager going?
UDOT?
So just a few project updates. SR-18, the Boulevard Main Street. Cut towards the PSNE phase in the August timeframe, while there. I-15, Montpole 68, widening. Also just headed towards the plan ahead phase. We're still anxiously waiting any word on the grant. I did hear this morning that we've been asked to put it in a new grant agreement, which I view that as a positive. So we'll see where that takes us, but still no news on that reconnecting community grant. SR-34, St. George Boulevard has been advertised. We'll construct that this fall. I-15 and Arizona State Lines in construction. Arizona State Line to Cottonwood Creek. Completion should be in the mid-July timeframe. SR-318 Bell Creek. I believe should be wrapped up. Should have the second application of paint should be done. I have been out there to confirm that, so I apologize. I-15 southbound passing lanes from 16 to 22 is under design. Work and designs and construction this summer. Virgin River Bridge, we're looking to the fencing on the Virgin River Bridge. We should advertise that in the July timeframe, late July. Some construction this fall. The passing lanes on SR-7 that I mentioned earlier will advertise. We're in design right now and advertise in the spring, next spring. Snow Canyon, White Rocks Trailhead improvements under construction, but getting close. And I think that's about all we got, unless there are any questions.
Okay, thanks. Virgin. Nobody? Why? Washington City?
We have a couple, I think, like reported last time, a couple traffic signals will be put in double. Same thing. We have one at Telegraph 500 West, so on the other side of Walmart, that will probably be going up. We'll probably put that out of bid here within the next month. The design's all done for it, so. There's a development that's going on the north side of that, that kind of drive. That's probably about all we got.
Washington County?
It's got some outside the boundary, but up on Co-op Terrace Road, around Co-op Reservoir, we're gonna be doing a little over 5 miles of, it's like cold in place recycling, but we're gonna add some Portland cement to it, the base that we grind up, and then put 3.5 inches of asphalt over the top. We're trying to keep that road. You guys don't have a problem with frost heave and that kind of stuff, but we do up in those areas, so. Trying to rehabilitate that road, and that should go up to bid here in the next week or so. I think we've got, I think we've.
Okay. D-Tech meeting June 17th. Myron's going fishing in July, so we won't be having that meeting unless Monty wants to be here. Only thing on the agenda will be item five. Okay, one more thing.
Oh.
For those of you in the room who don't know, Nick has accepted the position of Avenue Consultants. This is his last D-Tech meeting. I would personally like to thank Nick for 5 years of service to the MPO.
Three and a half.
Three and a half?
Seems like.
He's done 5 years worth of work in 3.5 years, and we appreciate the contributions he's been able to give to us. And we will be looking for a new planner to replace Nick. But again, thanks, Nick, for that.
Next time you see me, I'll be sitting back there. In the chairs.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
This meeting's adjourned.
All right.